All right, here we go. Another episode of Two Man Advantage, and once again, thrilled to the bone to be joined by my good friend, Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, you're recovering from Hall of Fame, you're in Toronto, but I hope you have your game face on because we have brought one of the biggest international celebrities in NHL hockey coverage, the King of Sweden himself, Per Bjurman, joining us from New York City. Per, is that okay? You sent me that intro. Did I follow it properly, or?
You asking me, or Pierre?
Yeah, no, I want to know, Per. I want to know if that was because you sent me that intro, and I just wondered if you felt I followed your instructions.
I did not, but thank you so much. I loved it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you joining us today, Pierre. And it's funny because Pierre and I were going back and forth and we had some contact with you. But it's fortuitous that you are joining us today because there's some news afoot in the National Hockey League that has some distinct Swedish overtones. And that, of course, was the trade earlier today between the Pittsburgh Penguins to Los Angeles Kings, with Carl Hagelin going from the two-time Stanley Cup champion, Carl Hagelin, going to Los Angeles for Tanner Pearson. Pierre, let's start with you. And it's funny because you were at the general managers meetings, which always follows the Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Toronto. It's a short one-day trip, but I know our colleague Craig Customs was there and wrote a piece about, you know, is this basically sort of throwing out the idea of making trades where players get a change of scenery, and is this the time of year as we approach Thanksgiving, the U.S. Thanksgiving, I'll note that, that these kinds of things might happen, and lo and behold, we have a pretty big trade with the Hagelin-Pearson one, and I wonder if are you surprised by it, or what's your first take on that?
Well, I'd like to apologize because you're going to hear banging and drilling around me, and it's because much like the L.A. Kings, much like the LA Kings roster, my house is under renovation. So pretty much nowhere quiet that I can go in what's left of where we're living in the part of the house that isn't being renovated, where I can avoid these noises. So I think it's just going to add a nice little atmosphere. It's like
we're walking
through downtown New York for fair. I mean, listen, I think the Kings and the Penguins have been working the phones for a while now. And, you know, Jim Rutherford had been making no bones to people talking to him that he was looking to give his team a bit of a jolt. And in terms of the Kings, I mean, I think Rob Blake waited as long as he could to not make a trade, made a coaching change before making a trade. But after yet another lackluster effort and a home loss to the Leafs on Tuesday night, you know, I think this is just the first of probably more moves for LA as they need to get, you know, probably, you know, younger and faster and they need to remodel this thing if they're going to come back next year and be able to compete. Not that they're white flagging this year, but I do think they're in pretty big trouble with Jonathan Quick and Jack Campbell out.
Per, what was your take on this? And I'm curious because I saw an interesting reference to, I guess, our reporters in, not ours, but all of the reporters in Pittsburgh, among the players they talked to today, Patrick Hornquist talking about how difficult a day it was for him. He and Carl Hagelin and their families are very close. And I think his comment was, the message has been received from GM Jim Rutherford there. And yeah, I wonder what your take on this. And it's interesting because Carl Hagelin was such a big part of the 2016 Stanley Cup run for the Penguins, less so in 2017. Were you surprised that he's a guy who's on the move? And is this it for him? Because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent or can be at the end of this season. What's your take on what is a big move for both these teams?
Well, let me first say it's a great honor to be with you two great gentlemen here in this podcast. Great pleasure. Well, I talked to Carl earlier today. I got hold of him a couple of hours after the trade was made, and he was, as people are, especially mid-season when they're traded, he was a little shocked. was emotional. He built some really strong relationships in Pittsburgh. As you said, he's best friends with Hornquist, but with other people too. Winning two cups has, you know, made it home for him. So he was quite shocked. But he, on the other hand, he's always trying to stay positive and talked about, well, it's going to be good to come to Los Angeles and play for a team with great potential. And he hoped to help them get a little faster. That's what he does, right? When he came to New York, to Rangers, and later on to Pittsburgh, it wasn't only that he's fast himself. He makes the teams faster. And I guess that's exactly what the Kings need, right?
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And Pierre, let me, you know, do you see this, though, as... I guess, obviously, if Carl Hagelin helps to turn things around in Los Angeles, I mean, still perilously early in this season, right? I mean, you mentioned it. This isn't, you know, it's not necessarily white flag time, but it also sets up an interesting possibility that Rob Blake may be using Carl Hagelin again if this team doesn't turn it around as we get closer to the trade deadline, that he's going to be someone and that other teams around the NHL would find attractive given his speed, given his playoff, not just experience, but his success in the playoffs. What do you see as the future in terms of this trade for the Kings?
Right. As Per knows, Carl Hagelin is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the LA Kings are having to retool / rebuild this roster. So you kind of wonder how that all fits in now. Now, I guess if Hagelin is a good fit, maybe the Kings sign him to an extension at some point. But what you just said, Scotty, I would think is also a possibility if the Kings can't get back into playoff race, which is they turn around and, make him a rental. I mean, because... The asset here in this trade might be clearing up cap space for the LA Kings, who have some big contracts and have their nucleus really locked up. But they really are capped out. If you look at their cap situation, it might be, and I say this with all due respect to Carl Hagelin, especially with Pear on our podcast, but it might be that one of the great benefits of this is that they've created a bit of cap flexibility moving forward past this year. Tanner Pearson had a couple more years on his deal, and the Kings really were kind of capped out. So, I mean, that's the other side of this, but we'll see. I mean, I think it can still go a lot of different ways here.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting, though, for me, is that when you look at the Penguins, and the Penguins right now, obviously not being where they expected to be in terms of the standings, they're below the playoff bubble now. But again, I don't think you can read too much into that at this stage for a team as experienced as the Penguins, although they are well down the list in the Eastern Conference right now. They're 4 points in arrears of the second wild card spot now, for what it's worth as we're taping this. But, you know, Jim Rutherford has a history of taking players that are maybe at a low ebb in their careers. And I think of Justin Schultz coming over from Edmonton. I think of Ian Cole coming from St. Louis. Go down the list. Per, let me ask you, does Tanner Pearson, does he fit that sort of mold of, hey, here's a guy that, you know, has shown at times in Los Angeles an ability to be a consistent offensive producer? Is he a guy that, is this another one of those reclamation projects that come playoff time, people are going to be going, oh, okay, that makes sense. And as Pierre noted, he's a guy who also brings cost certainty and contract certainty to the Penguins for the next couple of years. Is that the kind of move that we could be seeing the Penguins enjoying dividends from down the road and into the playoffs in next spring?
Maybe so. He's got potential, right? But they've been frustrated about the lack of energy and emotions they've been talking about. And I think he's been one of the more prominent examples of that he's not been, it hasn't looked like he's been feeling that good on the ice. And maybe a move to Pittsburgh, a team with that kind of always contenders, will be very good for him, and he can come back to what he was once was.
I should mention too, guys, just to jump in here. We should mention on the same day of this trade, it's announced that Jim Rutherford signed the contract extension as GM. And the reason I bring that up is that, you know, Jim Rutherford is not there to rebuild the Pittsburgh Penguins.
No.
he is there to extend the window. And so I thought it's revealing when you give a veteran GM like Jim Rutherford an extension, which I think was obviously the wise decision. Two Stanley Cups will do that. But it also tells you it's kind of a peek inside, you know, a peek behind the curtain. Because it tells you that ownership is saying, you know, Sidney Crosby still signed and Genny Malkin is still signed and Chris Letang. So let's go. Let's keep moving these pieces around them to try and take another run at things. So I thought that was interesting as well on this day.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a team that should be able to contend for 3 or 4 more years, right?
Yeah, well, and I guess that's the question. I'll ask you both this. I know that the Mike Sullivan has been unhappy. Certainly, Jim Rutherford has been talking very candidly about the fact that he was in a position to look to make moves because things were not where they wanted them to be. But this is also, to me, and you know what, they're one of those teams, and I put Los Angeles and Chicago in the same boat when you go back 4 or 5 or 6 years, where it didn't really matter what they did in the regular season, that you just knew at some point that the Blackhawks or the Kings or Boston, I suppose, you could throw into that mix. And certainly this Pittsburgh team, you go back even to 08 and 09, going to back-to-back cups and winning their first in the Crosby era in 09, that you knew that they would at some point get to the playoffs. And they always have, and Pierre, you alluded to it, winning back-to-back cups. And let me ask Pierre to start with then. Do you look at this team and the struggles of Matt Murray in goal, you look at this move, do you still believe that of this Penguins team? Do you still think, listen, I don't care where they are in the standings right now, it's the second week of November, they are going to be in the top 8 in the Eastern Conference come April? Or what's your take? Because at some point, the window does close, right? We've seen it close in L.A. We've seen it close, I think it's fair to say, in Chicago. What's your take on the Penguins and how they're constructed right now?
Well, me or Pierre?
Yeah, it's either one. Either the guys with Pierre.
See, this is going to be confusing during the podcast because you got Pierre and you got a pair.
I will try to enunciate more, but
yeah. Let's say Swedish pear.
go ahead, pear.
I still think they're better off right now than the teams you mentioned. I don't think they're getting really worse, and if they're in the playoffs, I think they're still very dangerous, especially since they have Mike Sullivan as a coach. I think he might be the most underrated coach in the league. He's never been nominated for Jack Adams, but still come playoff time, he's always good, right? And I think it's still like that. If they're in the playoffs, nobody wants to meet them. They're always going to be dangerous as long as Sidney Crosby and Geno Malkin is there and play like they do now.
And I think I always say, you know, start with, you know, the geography around them. And they're in a metropolitan division that's a bit in flux right now. The Atlantic is, I think, where the talent more resides. And so you look at the metropolitan as we tape this. Columbus is in first place despite the fact their top offensive threat and their number one goalie basically have told the team they're leaving. So how is that going to play out as the year goes on? The New York Islanders are surprisingly second right now. Excellent job by Barry Trotz, but does that have sustainability? I'm not convinced. The New York Rangers, who are openly rebuilding, who are probably going to trade back Zuccarello at some point, somehow are locking down third right now. Does that have sustainability? I guess what I'm saying is if you're Pittsburgh and you're 3 points behind the Rangers and Islanders right now as we tape this, your biggest concern is the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals in your division, and the Caps have kind of meandered their way through the first 6 weeks of the season somewhat predictably. The Caps are the team that you're really concerned about, and they're just 2 points ahead of you. And again, I say that with all due respect, but I think the Islanders and Rangers are going to have their ups and downs here moving forward. Columbus is a very good team. They were last year too, but I'm more concerned about the off-ice distractions that are playing out there. So what I'm saying is I think that if you're Pittsburgh, no matter how much you struggle in the opening 6 weeks of the season, you look at what's going on in your group and you're like, oh, we're right there. And I think that's all that really matters.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And again, I don't think the Penguins are anywhere near, you know, sort of the evolutionary arc that the Los Angeles Kings are at or the Chicago Blackhawks. And we obviously talked a lot about them last week with the dismissal of Joel Quenneville, the head coach there. So I couldn't agree more. Per, I want to switch gears, but stay with the Swedish theme. You'll find this all the way through this podcast. You can find them very thematic.
Yes.
And I know in talking to you before we started the tape that you were recently in Vancouver. And
I was not.
You were not, but you were in contact.
He was in Buffalo.
Yes. In Buffalo. I went to Boston and Buffalo. And yes, I covered the next great Swede.
Yes. Well, thank you for correcting my error. But you were not in Vancouver, but you were close, obviously, to the Vancouver Canucks. And the next great Swede. Now, I want to know, first of all, Elias Pettersson, I believe I'm saying that with a mild Swedish inflection there. Was that okay?
Yes, it's okay. If you were in Sweden, you would say, if you were Swedish, you would say Elias Pettersson. But, okay. You know, we're used to the North American way of saying our names, so it's no problem.
So no, I mangled
Pear,
it only
a bit. But Pear, you know how close Scotty and I are. Like, we're like brothers.
Yes.
He can't even say my name. I mean, he can't even say anything in French. So if you think he can say something in Swedish, he can't even say French. And I mean, the guy's Canadian. So, I mean, don't worry about it.
That's not entirely true because I can always say le gâteau est sur la table, which means the cake is on the table. You know that full well.
Yes.
But it's even beyond the pronunciation, though, with Pettersson, because I understand, Per, that you have launched a campaign
yes.
that he should be known as Elvis Presley.
Yes.
And my sense is it has not gone as well as you'd hope. But
no.
Tell us about
No, it's not working out at all. Pierre tried to help me telling his 699,000 Twitter followers about this. And
yes, I did.
People didn't really like it. Your aesthetic colleague, Jason Botchford, was especially upset about this. He's been threatening me with all kinds of pain if I keep this up. They don't like the name Elvis at all. I think it's the coolest name ever. But, you know, if nobody else is going to use it, I'm going to keep it in my blog for now.
Now, how did Elias, did you mention it to him that you were thinking that, you know, it might work for him? Or tell us a bit about him, because he is, you know, you mentioned, you know, potentially the next great Swede. But, you know, as we're speaking here, he is one of the stories of this next generation of players as we're chatting. He's got 10 goals in 14 games. He's got 7 assists. He is, I would say it's fair to say, that the single reason that the Vancouver Canucks have been one of the surprise stories of the first month and a half, first almost quarter of this season. What about this player, and what's your level of surprise at what he's done thus far, if you're surprised at all?
Well, you know, he started better than any Swede ever. Forsberg, Sundin, all those guys, they were nowhere near 10 goals after game, only what, 12, 13 games?
Yeah, 14 games, as we speak.
So absolutely I'm surprised. You know, I've been here for 14 years, so I haven't seen him back home at all. I heard about him, and people are telling me that he's a great, great talent. But to see him do this, I've been as stunned as everyone else, especially those first 6-7 games, and the game against Colorado when he had 5 points and played like a young Pavel Datsyuk. It's been amazing to watch him.
You say, Pierre, what's your sense of this? He's 6'2". Now he's still growing into his body. He's listed at 176 pounds, so obviously not filled out. But is what's your level of, impressedness, which is not really technically a word, but where do you, when you look at this Canucks team and you look at Pettersson, I'm like you. I occasionally will insert words that don't actually exist in a dictionary into my English conversation. So, but I wonder what's your take on the Canucks and where Pettersson is at right now.
Well, Pierre. First of all, the thing that I think about is, are we already wondering how he went fifth overall in the 2017 draft? I guess that's the first thing I would ask, but Jim Benning's taken a lot of heat during his years there as GM in Vancouver, but this certainly will shape up to be his calling card, him and his scouting staff there. But, I also like the fact that, of course, unlike a lot of 18-year-olds that jump right into the NHL, that, Pettersson stayed home for another year last year and continued to hone his skills, and I think that's so important. I think that just makes you better prepared for when you do finally come over, and I think your maturity level is more developed. And so I think, that's something I still think that unless you're Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby, I think it should be such a small list of players that start off at 18 in my mind in the NHL.
Yeah.
What did you glean, Pair, when you spent some time with him over the last few days and as you caught up with him on the road in Buffalo and then with the Canucks coming to your adopted home in New York, what did you get from him in terms of his personality, and were there things that surprised you about him in chatting with him?
Well, Louis Erickson said last night after their last game here in Brooklyn against the Islanders that I couldn't come to any more games because obviously I was bad luck for Elias. He only had 1 point during my travels with them here. So I'm the cooler, apparently. But yeah, I talked to him a little bit. He's very quiet. He's kind of different kind of person from most hockey players, but I think that's a good thing. Different is good, and I think he's got this amazing hockey brain. He's a hockey nerd, as far as I can tell, and it's all about hockey. He's been, I said, could you have dreamed about this? And I said, yes, this is exactly what I pictured when I was a kid. This is what I wanted. I believe in myself. But he's kind of shy with media. But the other guys are saying that he's such a humble, great kid. They love how he handles himself around the rink and both on and off ice. It's going to be, we had a lot of great defensemen coming over the last couple of years from Sweden. We have Eric and Victor, and we're proud of them. But it's been a while since we had a forward or center being the center of attention like this.
So if we go back to the 20, to finish my thought, I wanted to go back and look at my notes. But 2017 draft, so obviously Nico Hischier, it was the Nico or Nolan debate, right? Nolan Patrick goes 2. Hischier goes 1. And then Miro Heiskanen goes 3, Scotty. And I remember you writing about him. And you had just started your work with the Dallas Stars at that moment. And I remember when Heiskanen got picked, it wasn't a shock because he was highly ranked, but it also wasn't, that right away at that point in the draft is where it started to get interesting in terms of who Dallas could have taken. But Heiskanen's having an unbelievable rookie year right now with the Dallas Stars. So he makes you think. And Cale Makar goes 4 at Colorado, so we'll see you there. Defensemen normally take a little more time to develop. And then, of course, Pettersson at 5. So it'll be interesting, even in just 2 years, to compare the top 5 here, the way it all plays out.
Yeah. Is there a reason, do you think, Per, that this is, you know, this is the way the pendulum has swung in terms of young Swedish talent coming? I mean, is it just one of those arc things that, you know, in the past it's been talented forwards. Now we're on a part of the curve where we're seeing high-end defensive talent come where maybe we didn't see it for a number of years. Is there any rhyme or reason to it, or what do you think?
I couldn't really answer that. It's this new generation. It's so interesting to see how they have such confidence in themselves when they come up. The young Swedes used to be very, he is quiet off ice, but they used to be a little quiet on ice too, I think. And he's a different kind. He thinks shooting first. That's not been the Swedish way, has it? It's been more like passing first, right? And he's everything. He's a goal scorer and a passer. And I think Elias himself is—he's not part of a pattern, really. He's unique.
Yeah. All right. We are going to bring to a close this segment of Two Man Advantage, our Swedish day here on the podcast. But Per Bjurman, do not go away. Pierre, I know you would never go away. But we'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll pick this up. We'll talk about another Swede whose name is perpetually in the news. How about William Nylander? So don't go away. We'll be back with the second segment of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. All right. And we'll come back in 3, 2, 1. As promised, here we are. Pierre, before we get in, obviously there are a couple of things that Pierre and I'd like to discuss with you before we wrap up Two Man Advantage, the podcast today. But you mentioned you'd been in New York for 14 years. Tell us a bit about how did you end up here? And you and I and Pierre have spent a lot of time crisscrossing the hockey world and spending many pleasurable evenings together, but how did you end up in New York?
In fact, when I think of Pear, I think about the lovely walks that we have around town, all the NHL cities that we've been to. I love going for a stroll with Pear. It's very enjoyable.
Yes, that's what I think.
In fact, I was surprised that Pear would agree to come on the podcast with us, Pierre, after you made him go on the March of Tears at the All-Star Game in Tampa last year, forcing him into the 20-mile walk from dinner to post-dinner refreshments. So I think it's good of Pear to have put that behind him.
Yes. Well, I thought I'd be out walking during this podcast.
Well, you know that's not going to happen.
No. Well, I came here in early 05 as the regular correspondent for U.S. correspondent for Aftonbladet and did, you know, news and entertainment and everything. And in back of my head, I had it's going to be so fun to do some NHL hockey. I thought I'd only be here for a year, and I thought, yes, I'm going to see a press box in the National Hockey League. Well, the first assignment, the first NHL assignment was the press conference when Gary Bettman canceled the season. So
to the NHL, Bear.
Yeah. So that was no fun. But in September, Henrik Lundqvist got over here to the New York Rangers and had immediate success. And I started covering him, and he got really hot back in Sweden. So they wanted more and more, and I started writing more and more hockey. And eventually, they closed the correspondence office, but kept me here. And now it's mostly NHL all the time.
That's good. And now you live in New York City. I remember you, at one point you were going to have a party for all the hockey writers, and then that never happened. So we've never been to your place. But what has been the most challenging part for you, you know, living away from home, but also covering the Swedish hockey community in the NHL, because it's a tight-knit group. And my sense is your relationship with the Swedish players is probably a lot different than Pierre's relationship with North American players, or my relationship would be. Do you think that's fair? And maybe what's that been like for you?
Well, it's been great. I wouldn't call it a challenge at all, because the players have been and continue to be really, really great. You hear all these horror stories about the relationship between the soccer national team and media back home, and I'm surprised all the time because the guys here are so humble and so good and always talk to me and help me with so I can cover them. I guess it's a little bit about they have their family and friends back home. They get to read in Swedish about them, I guess. Perhaps that's part of it, but I think it's amazing.
Well, it's also because you're a great guy and you're fun to have a drink with, let's be honest. But
as long as we're not walking.
Yes. But by the way, Pear's highlight every year, just so our people listening know this, his career highlight every year is every spring when the New York Rangers are eliminated, Pear has to go to Henrik Lundqvist and ask him if he's going to go play in the World Championships for Sweden. That's yes. His favorite moment.
Yes, that's been a challenge for sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, every once in a while, Pierre and I end up in your column. And it's probably just one of those good things that I don't want to speak for Pierre, although I often do. I don't think either of us can read Swedish, so it's probably a good thing that we don't know exactly what's being said about us. But the more important thing will be for you to lobby your Swedish fan base, Pierre, to subscribe to The Athletic. So that'll be your next goal in the column. I hope that's a top priority for you.
Absolutely. It's mostly in the blog. I'm writing a live blog from every game, and that's where you two often end up. But I'm certainly going to tell them to subscribe to the Athletic. Absolutely.
Well, it's funny, as we move back into the actual hockey world, I was just sort of checking to make sure we hadn't been lapped by news while we're recording this. And I see our good friend Chris Johnson from Sportsnet with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're out west. And I see Joe Pavelski was giving the collective Toronto media a bit of a shot as, you know, quote him, he says, "You guys need a few more Nylander articles out there. It's been kind of quiet." So that's a good, it's a good topic for us, especially on a day where there was a big trade. And certainly as we bear down between, now and the end of the month, the deadline under which William Nylander must be brought under contract or will be unable to play in the NHL this season. Pierre, let's start with you. You've been covering that, and it's such a huge story for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And really, it's a huge story across National Hockey League, because there are lots of teams that have no doubt been in touch with the Maple Leafs about their plans for William Nylander. And if it doesn't look like the team can find a middle ground on a contract, the Leafs, one of the options obviously they'll have to look at is to try and trade him, and presumably that he would then sign with another team. And I wonder, is there a way to describe where it's at and maybe how much meat there is to the whole trade story and stories, I suppose, plural, that are percolating as the clock ticks away on the Leafs and William Nylander?
Yeah, well, that was my piece today. I kind of explored, from making a bunch of calls the last couple of days, you know, what teams I think that have either internally discussed Nylander or outwardly have already talked to Toronto about it, or third option, plan to reach out to Toronto and haven't yet. So I had a bunch of teams in my piece today on The Athletic, and it's still early in that process, but certainly Carolina from the get-go has been really aggressive about letting the Leafs know that they'd like to stay in the mix. The thing that I always stumble on with Carolina, even though they may have the best trade fit because they're so deep on defense, I always stumble on the thought of how is it that the Hurricanes could come to a contract agreement with Nylander if the Leafs could not. So I always struggle with that part of it, which is why I don't know if it could ever happen. But I will say this, one of the reasons why it's starting to percolate on the trade front is because the Leafs are sort of operating on parallel tracks, right? They have to they have to know what's out there so that as they get closer to December 1st or late November, and everyone listening by now knows that, you know, if Nylander is not signed to an NHL contract by December 1st, he can't play in the NHL this season. The Leafs have to keep trying to sign him on one hand while at the same time exploring what's out there trade-wise if they end up wanting to trade him. For some reason, I'm sticking to the position that I think he's actually going to re-sign with the Leafs. I just think it's going to be one of those 11th hour things where finally each side moves by a few more inches to where they need to go and decide whether or not they're willing to make that deal.
Per, what's your, I mean, you've known the Nylander family as William's father, Michael, a longtime NHLer. So I'm guessing that you've known the family and their hockey lives for some time. What's your take on how this is all unfolded and maybe how it's playing in Sweden? Is it big news back home? And what's your take on the track it might take between now and December 1st?
Well, yes, it's a big story in Sweden too, and I'd say the mainstream, the general public has a hard time understanding this and think it's crazy that you say no to 6.5 million and wants 8 instead. But it's more complicated than that, right? With the cap and other contracts and stuff. But so he's getting hit a little bit in Sweden about this, actually. I think, like Pierre, in the end, he's going to resign. They're going to come to a compromise. And as I understand, the longer they wait, the cap hit's going to be a little less, right? Isn't that
a fact? Well, it's higher this year, but lesser going forward, interestingly, which it's strange the way the CBA works that way, but which actually, as a silver lining, if the Leafs do end up signing him, kind of works out for the Leafs because they have tons of cap room this year for the last time. And then next year is when, of course, the new contracts, which will eventually presumably get signed for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and maybe Jake Gardner, who's UFA. You know, starting next year is when life gets real for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the cap world.
Yeah.
So the fact that because Nylander has 6 weeks into the season still unsigned, strange little caveat is that the AEV is that the cap number is actually higher this year, but a bit lower past this year, which would actually work out for Toronto.
Yeah. Well, Scotty, you asked about the family. I know them quite well, and I'd say they're. Stubbornness would be one of their characteristics. So he's not going to cave immediately, that's for sure.
Well, and that's, I mean, there certainly has been no end of sort of speculation or wondering aloud what kind of role Michael Nylander, the father, might be playing in negotiations. Per, you are probably in as better position than most to say, is that likely one of the factors that is part of the equation here, is that the father is involved and certainly his history as an NHL player would lend credibility to your description of him. How big a role do you think Michael Nylander is playing in this?
Well, that's pure speculation because I wouldn't really know, but I think his son listens to him with his experience from the league. And yes, I'd guess he's involved, but I think William is a grown man now, so it's his decision. I think him and the agent are the ones taking the decisions here.
Yeah. Pierre, one of the interesting parts of this is that the Leafs have been, for the most part, so good, and certainly offensively, except for the odd sort of dip through the first quarter of this season, that they really haven't missed William Nylander in the sense that they aren't languishing in the standings. Do you think it's changed the Leafs' perception on how important William Nylander is to them, and maybe that he is a better asset to in terms of moving William Nylander for presumably an upgrade along the blue line, a young defenseman with lots of upside. You mentioned Carolina and their depth. I've heard Minnesota's a team that, you know, and certainly young defenseman Matt Dumba's name is out there, all those kinds of things. But do you think because the Leafs have been pretty good that it changes how William Nylander's viewed by management and maybe his overall importance to the team, or is that just white noise?
No, I think the Leafs would still like him in the fold. I just think they feel that he makes them even that much more dangerous. He makes them deeper. He makes them harder to match up against. If you're going to win a Stanley Cup, you have to be able to beat teams in many different ways. And I think they still view Nylander as a guy that just adds another important weapon to their arsenal. You know, the fascinating thing in all of this is that when the Leafs signed John Tavares, they not only believed in their plans that they could re-sign Nylander, Marner, and Matthews, despite signing Tavares to all that money, they shared that vision with John Tavares because that was important in convincing Tavares of coming to Toronto, right? John Tavares doesn't want to go to a team and then have it blow up because of him. So there's a lot riding on this, and that's why I do think trading Nylander is really last resort. It may happen. It may have to happen if they can't sign him, but it's absolutely not what the Leafs want to do. I mean, the Leafs really believe strongly in what kind of team they can be if they have Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, and Marner all playing at that once. And that's the vision for Kyle Dubas, but he may have his hand forced on this. And I know that our colleague at The Athletic, Jonas Siegel, made a compelling argument recently about not, you know, even if they can't sign him, don't trade him, just sit on him for the year and then revisit it in the summer. And you know, the point being, I guess, that, you know, you're not making a trade you're going to regret, and you're also sending a message that, you know, the Leafs aren't going to be dictated to in these situations. And yeah. I get all that. But the counter to that is probably where I sit, is that this is the Leafs opening account and trying to be a cup contender. And I think it's hard to go in that dressing room and look everyone in the eye and say, not only do we not have William Nylander, we also got nothing for him this year. You're not going to have that many cracks at it, no matter how much everyone talks about building a team for several years to contend. The reality is this might be the deepest Leafs team period this year before the cap starts to be more difficult to navigate moving forward.
Per, before we leave the Nylander saga, whether he ends up playing for the Leafs or ends up, if plan B becomes the reality and he ends up playing somewhere else, when you miss a quarter of the season or more by the time he gets around to getting back onto NHL ice, how do you think it affects his season? I mean, you know him as a player. Is it the kind of thing that he comes back and he is ultra motivated to prove people wrong or to make up lost ground? Or do you think the fact that you come back in after missing so much time and the rest of the league is already at warp speed, that it becomes a real difficult track for William Nylander, regardless of who he ends up playing for this season, assuming that he doesn't sit out the entire campaign?
Yeah, well, you know, he's been practicing a lot. Up with Austria, he had some friend coaching a team there, and I think he's the kind of player that would come into game shape pretty fast at this age, and he seemed like that kind of player. I think he'd need a couple of weeks perhaps to practice with the team, and then he'd be ready. I think it's interesting. I agree with everything Pierre is saying. At the same time, the Maple Leafs seem to be one of the very few teams that could afford to trade a player by that caliber and get a demon for him.
Well, it certainly is not the last we'll hear of it. And I'm pleased that we're be able to help out Joe Pavelski in San Jose, who seems to want more William Nylander stories. So that's a good thing. Before we wrap up, though, our visit with Per Bjurman and this episode of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. Pierre, we've come to the end of the annual Hall of Fame cycle. And I always say, you know, for many years I was in Toronto, I'd say probably 9 or 10 years in a row, I covered the ceremonies, and it's fallen out of the routine for me, and so I missed being there. But in general, were there highlights for you? And then I want to ask you and Per, moving forward, about what we might see next year in terms of the class of 2019. But what was a highlight for you of this year's Hall of Fame events? Not just the night, but the days leading up to it. Maybe there were a couple.
Yeah, well, it's always such a big deal, especially for us at TSN. You know, we carry the event, we have for years, and I think we're very proud of it. And James Duffy does a tremendous job, and I love doing the pre-show with Juno Retta and having the guests come off the red carpet. And, you know, this year we had Wayne Gretzky among our guests, and he was just so fantastic. Of course, he had Marty Brodeur in Salt Lake City at the Olympics, as you remember, after the Swedish torpedo. Put a million pucks past Canada in the Olympic opener. Canada had to shift gears, and Marty Brodeur saved the day. So it's just great to hear all those stories. But if I'm going to look back at the class of 2018, I'm just going to remember the word inclusivity, which is just hockey, you know, barriers going down and being represented in this hockey class. Of course, Willie O'Ree breaking the color barrier 60 years ago, and how long overdue, and you wrote about it, Scotty, that his induction finally came. But Jana Heifer, just the sixth female player, of course, female players only starting to go in about a decade ago, but, you know, just her wonderful speech about openness, you know, with her wife and kids in the front row beaming with pride as she spoke. I just think it was a wonderful moment to think about all the elements at play here in terms of what this year's induction class could mean for maybe someone watching at home who didn't feel like it was their place to even think about being part of hockey. So I think that's probably what I'm going to remember.
Yeah, very, very well said, my friend. Mm-hmm. Per, you and I were chatting just before we started this. We were talking about 2019, maybe less, I don't want to say slam dunks, but maybe less obvious candidates for next year's class. But it certainly opens up a lot of discussion about players who are certainly worthy of discussion. And one of them, a player you know very well, and Pierre and I know exceedingly well from our days covering hockey in Toronto and in Ontario, but the longtime captain of the Ottawa Senators, Daniel Alfredson. Pierre, what's your take on that? And is it the kind of groundswell where people will sort of rise up in the coming weeks and months to say, hey, wait a minute, Daniel Alfredson really does deserve a real hard look from the Hall of Fame selection committee. Maybe not so much for his point production, but for what he meant to the franchise in Ottawa and for the number of years that they were legitimate Stanley Cup contenders year in and year out during his prime as a Senator.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if it doesn't happen in a couple of years, there'll be a riot in Ottawa, because he's a god there. I was there a couple of times, spending time with him in the Canadian capital, and it was like I was out walking with Jesus. You know, you come into a lunch restaurant and it just falls quiet and everybody's stunned. Look, it's Alfie. So I think exactly what you're saying, what he did for the Senators for so many years and what he meant to the city and the club, I think he should be in the discussion for sure.
Yeah, no question. And you know, the thing that I like to bring up, and it's not to bring down Matt Sundin, it's quite the opposite. I thought Matt Sundin was absolutely deserving of going in the first crack that he had a chance. But you know, I don't know how you feel about this, Pair, and I know you have relationships with both guys, so I'm not trying to put you in a tight spot here, but I think that Alfredson's career mirrors that of Sundin's in so many ways. I mean,
absolutely.
They were the captains of the each were the captain of a Ontario team. Neither one won a Stanley Cup, but they both were part of the same Olympic championship team in Torino, Italy.
Yes.
There's so many parallels between Alfredson and Sundin, and for the life of me, I mean, and it's hard. I'm not on the selection committee, so I get that it's hard. Everyone has a guy that, a person that they nominate. But for me, that Sundin goes in first crack and Alfredson now has been passed over twice, I feel like there's a disconnect there. I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah, so in Sweden, they call them the golden generation. It was Sundin, Forsberg, Lidström, and Alfie in the same age range and extremely successful. And they were really golden. So we're waiting for Alfie to close the circle.
Well, I think that's one of the great, again, Per, you and I were talking about this before. I mean, for me, I think of a player like Sergei Zubov, who has been long overlooked for the work he did, certainly both with Dallas and the New York Rangers, a huge part of both those franchises at some of their greatest moments. And I think it will be interesting to see how this unfolds next year, because the face of the selection committee continues to change. And I just think it'll be interesting to see if Alfredson becomes one of those players that has support within that committee, and maybe next year is the year that we see him. But for me, it's always difficult at the Hall of Fame time because if people take it so personally. It's an important, maybe the most important designation for a player, a builder, official, anyone connected to the game. But if you say that so-and-so, you don't think that they belong in the Hall of Fame, sometimes people take it very personally. So it will be interesting to see how that unfolds
mention, Scotty, that you mentioned the selection committee continues to evolve. We should mention, I mean, Cassie Campbell-Pascal,
yep,
former national team member for the Canadian women's team, and of course now in her broadcasting career with Hockey Night in Canada, she is now on the committee, and that's very important because there haven't been a lot of women over the years on that committee,
right?
And there's really no excuse that ever since they opened the door to female players, that there have actually been a couple of years where there weren't any elected. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Right. So
yeah.
I think her voice, her voice and her wisdom in that matter will be important, on that committee. But, a couple of other names, you mentioned Zubov, I'm in agreement there. Doug Wilson is a former Norris Trophy winner, perennial All-Star in the 80s with the Chicago Blackhawks, of course, now the gem of the Sharks. But it's always mystifying to me that he's been passed over all these years. Alex McGillney, to me, is a Hall of Famer through and through, and he's been passed over for a long time. And the reason why it's going to be interesting is that there aren't really any automatic first-year eligible players next year that scream out at you. I mean, some of the names that are first-year eligible are Vincent LeCavalier and Brad Richards, Marty St. Louis, old three amigo buddies from the Tampa Bay Lightning days, and Patrick Elias from the New Jersey Devils. I mean, those are probably the three names that jump out from the first-year eligibility list, but I don't know, unless you guys disagree, those guys had terrific careers, but I don't know that it screams, first-year crack at the Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
It's going to be interesting regarding Swedes. It's going to be interesting in a couple of years when the Sedins are there. They would have to bring both of them in at the same time, right? They can't just choose
you would
Daniel
hope.
Or Henrik.
Together. Well, yeah, and I see little doubt that they are Hall of Famers, but again, it will be interesting at that time to who else is in the mix and the numbers game, because there are limits to the number of players that go in every year. So that will be interesting. In short, Per, no shortage of Swedish hockey news to keep you in North America, which is where we want you to stay. So that's that's a good thing, and I hope that there are many long walks in our future. Together. So
yes.
Yeah, so
I hope that, so too.
Actually, Per, as you know, I'm prepared to walk around any number of craps tables with you anywhere in North America. So, but on that note, it's time to bring to a close this episode of Two Man Advantage. And Pierre, as always, fine work. And Per Bierman, thank you so much for joining us today. And we hope to have you on again. There you go. I knew that we were going to hear something like that. But thank you very much, Per. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Well, the pleasure's been mine. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.